if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast 184. Paul Williams and Barry O'Hanrahan join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss this week's PGA and European Tour action, namely the Sanderson Farms Championship and the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship. Good morning, gents.
Morning, chaps.
Morning, guys.
This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit begambleaware.org for more information. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world-famous golf betting system website with our in-depth betting previews, masses of tournament statistics and our predictor models, which again, this week, have strokes gained in them. All available completely free of charge with no paywall. Please subscribe to this podcast and drive the popularity of the show. We are available on social media. On Twitter, Paul is at Golf Betting. I'm at Bamford Golf. Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. Plus, look out for the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel, where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. Now, you guys, as listeners, power this podcast, so we need your five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. We have one from Canada here, gentlemen. It's from Morris84. Best golf pod around, 5 stars. Always a great listen with plenty of stats and knowledge. If you're looking to avoid brown trouser golf bets, these are the guys you need to listen to. That's from Morris84 in Canada. Thank you, Morris, for that. Much appreciated.
Yeah, thanks, Morris. I'm not entirely sure how you would avoid the brown trouser brigade listening to some of the players that we've put up recently, because they've tended to have fallen into that category. But I understand the sentiment. So thanks for taking the time to give us that review.
We have learned not to put up Emiliano Grillo over the years, and Cameron Tringali and all these sorts, Harold Varner.
You know what happens as soon as you mention the names, Steve? As soon as you mention those names, you know what's going to happen.
They'll start winning.
Boys. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Potentially.
Yeah. There is that angle to it. Right. It's unavoidable, I suppose. Let's quickly talk about the Ryder Cup. Mm. Congratulations to Team USA. They absolutely monstered the 2021 Ryder Cup from Whistling Straits from start to finish. It was a phenomenal performance. Just some of the golf on view from the Americans was just absolutely fantastic. Dustin Johnson, Colin Morikawa. It's difficult to pick individuals, but some of the golf that was on show was fantastic. I thought Scottie Scheffler did a good job trying to keep Bryson calm at stages. And the Europeans just couldn't cope with it. Just could not cope with it. What were your views, gentlemen?
Very, very distant second in the end, weren't we? It was a shame. And after the first session, 3-1 down, it was... It looked like a long way to come back from that point, and so it proved. But yeah, you can't take anything away from the Americans. They were outstanding. And to a man, as you said, there was no weak link there. Whereas realistically, you look at the European team, and aside from John Rahm and Sergio, and a few sparks from a couple of others now and again, there wasn't a great deal there. There's a lot of out-of-form European players who didn't up their game and didn't perform anywhere near as well as they could do.
Yeah, it's disappointing that the Ryder Cup didn't trigger some good swing feels for more of our team, you know, and got them playing a bit more consistently. But I guess it shows that you do need that. A lot of these guys need that bit of form coming in to have their confidence at maximum capacity. And look, it didn't work out for us. nor my bet on Europe, just based on price alone, which was partisan idiocy on my part, I would say. But like, there's can't. I'm not gonna get too disappointed by us losing. Like, it's great to win, but it's not the end of the world to lose as a fan. Well, for me, it isn't. And to watch the US play golf at that level was just a treat. They destroyed us. It gave us no hope, which kind of almost removed the enjoyment factor as a competitive match. But enjoyment factor from watching incredible golf, like, that was at right up there, 9 out of 10. They were stunning.
Some really cracking individual performances as well, weren't there, within the US team? Morikawa was brilliant. DJ 5 out of 5. Even Bryson, a lot of the narrative before the event was how he would get on, who he'd be paired with, how many he'd play. But I thought his demeanour and his play, full stop, was very, very strong. As to how that all kind of, ingratiating with the teammates ongoing in terms of regular stroke play events and interactions, I don't know. It remains to be seen, but... it was just a walkover in the end, wasn't it?
It gave him a perfect opportunity for the his showmanship really came to the fore this week, and he backed it up with some incredible stuff to really juice the crowd. He still has the capacity to shoot himself in the foot when he opens his mouth, but seems to have won, like, at least short-term support and kind of acknowledgement of that. It was incredible entertainment when he was taking the driver out, pulling it out like out of his bag, like a sword out of a scabbard. you have to just love that, no matter what
Jimenez about it, didn't it? A little bit of Jimenez in there.
Yeah, if Jimenez was like popping cans of spinach like Popeye or something like that.
Just the way he was pulling it out of the bags, though.
Yeah.
Like a sword. That's, the D'Artagnan kind of.
It's the kind of entertainment that you just can't, you can't resist. It's brilliant. So,
I asked you off mic, Paul, the course in Rome for the next Ryder Cup. You said off mic you think it's going to play a little bit more neutral. So, won't be Le Golf National, technical, tight affair, high rough.
No,
it's going to, just from the experience we saw a few weeks ago at the Italian Open.
Yeah, it's more exposed than, you think with Italian tracks, you think very tight tree-lined tracks, and it's not that. It's more risk-reward. Aesthetically, there are elements that you would kind of align it to Le Golf National, but the way it played, I think it would be a good, strong setup for the Ryder Cup. I think it will encourage a lot of risk-reward shots, which is exactly what that format of the event is about. As to whether it will overly favour the European team as in terms of the setup, I'm not overly convinced. I think we're going to have to be significantly better and stronger by the time we get round to Rome in a couple of years' time to stand a chance of beating what is a very young US team that's only going to develop and be added to, I'm sure, over the next 2 years.
Did you guys think that Whistling Straits was, all forgetting the result or pushing the result aside and the European performance aside, I thought it was a course that we could have really competed on had things been going better for, like, our form and how the guys got
especially with
going.
The wind.
For sure, yeah.
Apart from the morning foursomes on Friday, where the wind laid down, there was no wind, and that, they seriously took us apart 3-1. And apart from that, you can't even say. I mean, the wind was up for pretty much all the sessions after that, so it was pretty European conditions. It was cold.
Yeah.
I thought the course certainly. I don't think it. I mean, clearly they wide fairways and it was no rough, but. I think Europe could have done well around there, just with the amount of good coastal, linksy kind of golfers that we've got. There was just so many players, Westwood, Hatton, Fitzpatrick. There was a long list of players. Fleetwood's had a terrible year going in there with no form. And that spark didn't occur, did it? It just continued.
Casey, Westy, you know, just so many guys just tapering off or just like, yeah, bang out of form. Do you know what? Just back to the course, one final thought on it. I thought they did a great job with the making some par fours drivable. Makes it more exciting in that risk reward thing, and gives you you know, just gives the crowd that juice and brings the elements of big scores and eagles into it. And I thought they did a really good job with that, and not just banging them back at the furthest tee boxes back away from the hole.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, no, it wasn't excessive in terms of length, was it? It gave everyone opportunities. And I think my kind of knee-jerk reaction to it was more even than I expected it to be in terms of the setup. The result is the result. That just shows you that the play from the American team versus the European team was so significantly stronger. It was... the result was, foregone conclusion, really, once it all started.
Just to tick the cross the T's and dot the I's, top combined point scorer, as Paul mentioned earlier, Dustin Johnson, 5 out of 5. Windy conditions, top of our predictor model over 5 years for wind play. He won that particular market. Clearly, he also was top American, top European. 3.5 points out of 5 was John Rahm. Should we not talk about the Ryder Cup now? Should we talk about this week's golf?
Yep, let's go.
let's mix it up, Paul. I think we should let's start off with your event. The host course being at the home of golf, St Andrews, always one of the bigger tournaments on the European Tour, the Dunhill or Alfred Dunhill Links Championship, a reasonable field.
Yeah, take it away. Dunhill Links, off to the home of golf, as you say, for our regular pro-am jaunt up at St Andrews and the local tracks up there. $5 million prize fund. So it's always well attended. Decent enough field, as you say, despite the late withdrawal of Tony Finau, who, I don't know if you've seen his quote, but there's an undisclosed illness, which sounds very much like
a hangover.
He's got it's the cocktail flu.
Yeah, something like that. So Tony's not, and he would have been the top ranked player in the field, which is a shame he hasn't come over, but entirely understandable, I guess. That's left Shane Lowry as the 14-1 favourite. Billy Horschel, 14-1 also. Tommy Fleetwood, 14-1. Tyrrell Hatton, 16-1. Alex Noren, 16-1. And then you've got the likes of Victor Perez, Thomas Peters, Brandon Grace, all 28s. Bob McIntyre, 35s, 40-1 bar. So you've got five at the very top there who stand out in terms of their position in the market. Three of whom are coming straight back from Wisconsin with tails between the legs, I guess, is the only way to describe it. Shane Lowry, Fleetwood and Tyrrell Hatton. In terms of the markets, Ladbrokes this week, 8 places each way, 1/5 of the odds. They're 1/5 of the odds on and 8 places on this event and also the Simonson Farms Championship this week. So some decent additional places on both events. If you pop
along, total that up with 6 additional each way places, Paul, with my crazily basic mathematics.
You've cracked it there, Steve. if you haven't got a Ladbrokes account, pop along to the site. There's an offer on there. You can get £4, £5 or €5 free bets after just an initial £5 or €5 win bet or €5 or €5 each way bet will qualify you for these £4 or £5 free bets. T's and C's apply, of course. Pop along to the site. There's a link to the offer on there if you fancy a bit of that. But 8 places each way, 1/5 of the odds on both events is a strong position from Ladbrokes this week.
Can I stop you as well? I just want to highlight to our regular podcast listeners. I know a lot of them use our predictor models. You've put a lot of work in over the last weeks and months in terms of strokes gained. And it's well worth noting that both European and PGA Tour predictor models now and will ongoing have strokes gained data within them. And from what you were saying, Paul, it's a moving feast, window over 6 months in it, and every strokes gained category there off the tee to green, around the green, and putting in addition to our traditional stats, so, you know, the accuracy, greens in regulation, putting average and whatever. So they've been added to both predictor models ongoing, strokes gained, and completely free of charge as ever at Golf Betting Systems. That's worth mentioning, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to qualify that, this is 6 months rolling, and it's across both tours where the strokes gained have been captured. Yeah. So you'll find a combination of European and PGA Tour stats for a player in there. It isn't just isolated one or the other. So you get a fully blended view of how players are performing in the most recent 6 month period. So yes, pop along and have a play with it. Yes, so back to the Dunhill Links then. Yeah, played over three tracks, three courses for 3 days, Kings Barnes, Carnoustie and St Andrews. The final round is at St Andrews on Sunday. The cut comes after 54 holes this week rather than 36, and it's the top 60 and ties who make it through to the final day. So some slight changes to the ordinary setup for a regular European Tour event. Realistically, though, if you're sitting in 60th spot going into the final 18, you're going to do well to get anywhere near the lead generally. In terms of the courses, we all know about St Andrews, of course, classical links golf track, isn't it? It tends to play the easiest of the three alongside Kings Barnes. Carnoustie tends to play the toughest of the three. All depends on the weather and the wind, though. And they can all play reasonably tough if it's really, really windy. But yeah, normal links affair, wide fescue, rough, pop bunkers, gorse, you know, the standard stuff that you get on a true links or set of links courses. I'd say that only plays as tough as the conditions get. And even so, it is a prime event, so they don't tend to set it up brutally, particularly if there's forecast or some wind in the weather. And it does look like we're going to get a bit this week, actually. Should be some light rain, should be some sunny spells, relatively low temperatures, low to mid-50s in terms of the Fahrenheit conditions, 15 to 20 mile an hour winds, particularly on Friday and Saturday. On Thursday and Sunday, it's going to be 10 to 15. So there's going to be a reasonable wind blowing across all three of the courses. You'd have thought that would keep a lid on the temperature, on the scoring, but you know, even going back historically, when they've had some trickier conditions, it's not really impacted the winning score massively. 15 under tends to be as kind of as high as it gets. 24 under as low as it gets, somewhere in that kind of region, even with trickier conditions, is what we should expect. Going back historically then, 2010, Martin Kaymer won here, 16 to 1. He won at 17 under. There are some real long shots in this, which you'll hear as I go through. Michael Hoey in 2011, 250 to 1. He was 22 under. Brandon Grace, 50 to 1 the year after. He was also 22 under. David Howell, another three-figure winner, 125 to 1 at 23 under in 2013. Then we had Oliver Wilson, 500 to 1. And you'd have done incredibly well to pick Ollie Wilson out of that lineup that week. But he won at 17 under at 500 to 1. Torbjørn Olsen, 200 to 1 in 2015. I remember you putting him up that week, Steve, back in 2015.
Amazing.
18 under. Yeah, that was a hell of a pick to grab Olsen, because he didn't have a massive amount of incoming form either, and he converted at 18 under. Till Hatton at 66 to 1, 23 under in 2016. He defended the following year at 22 under and a shot deeper at 24 under. Lucas Beauregard won at 50 to 1 in 2018 at 15 under, and then Victor Perez, last time he came here, 2019, was 175 to 1 shot. He won at 22 under, gained his first European Tour win into the bargain on his debut here at St Andrews, or in the Dunhill Links. That's a real eclectic mix, a real mix of prices as well. And there's a real mix of incoming form if you look through the stats of those players that I've just read through. Some were in form, some were horribly out of form. I mean, if you'd have picked Michael Hoey, who had won, I don't know, 10 or 12 events back, but after that, he'd gone right off the boil. It was in 251.
That's a name I haven't heard for a while.
Well, it's funny you say that.
He were absolutely addicted to that guy, Holy. Yeah, but he always used to win at crazy odds, and he used to win far more than he should have done.
Yeah.
He used to win quite regularly, didn't he, Holy?
He's the kind of player, he's like a Scott Henn type player who does absolutely nothing, or did absolutely nothing, and then would pop up at 200-1 and convert. And there are a number of those players around, aren't there, who have that ability when they do find themselves in the mix to get over the line. But
they don't go away, do they? They actually win.
And they're kind of your blind backing type players when they're in the field. But he's gone right off the boil. But saying that, I have seen his name pop up on some of the lower ranked tours recently. So there's been some semblance of form. Perhaps there's a renaissance coming from Michael Hoey a bit further down the line. We shall see. You'd done well to pick out Hoey. You'd have done incredibly well to pick out Ollie Wilson at 500-1, and even the likes of David Howell. Victor Perez, last time he'd missed two cuts coming into this, so there wasn't a massive amount of to go on other than some results from a little bit further back. Saying all that, the last five winners did all have a top 10 finish of some description in their last five starts, so there was something a little to grab onto, I guess. Looking through event history as well, there's not a massive indicator. I mean, you look at Keimer, Wilson, Olsen, they'd all finished runner-up before, but as I just mentioned, Victor Perez was playing his debut. Lucas Beauregard had event form of 32, miscut coming into this. Tyrrell Hatton, before he won his first Dunhill Links title, had missed the cut on his previous two attempts. So, if you're looking through a classic current form, course form combination to try and find the winner of this, it could throw you completely off the scent. Tough one to pin in that respect. Tough one to pin statistically too, because you tend to only get the stats from St Andrews, so the other tracks don't tend to show us how the players are performing. High greens and regulation tends to be the order of the day, but then you're playing on greens that are massive and you expect players to hit high greens and regulation. When it's a bit tougher, maybe scrambling comes into it a little bit more. And for me, I think it's more about surviving Carnoustie and maximising the score you get on King's Barnes and St Andrews to give yourself a position going into Sunday, and hopefully you can produce that super low round on Sunday that's going to get you over the line. But I don't know. We'll see. You could spend a long time pouring through this, I think, trying to find something to really grab onto, it could be an awful lot of red herrings. Anyway, I've backed five. I've looked at the top of the market: Lowry, Hatton, Fleetwood. They're all returning from Wisconsin and defeated. I mean, where they want to play in a slow format, cold, damp, breezy 4 days. I'm not convinced, really. I think they could lose a bit of patience with that, particularly Hatton. Billy Horschel won at Wentworth, as we know, and shows that these players coming down from the PGA Tour can take a European Tour level event with ease, really. It is his debut, though, here. And the closest correlation, I guess, you can get for Billy Horschel is how he's performed at the Pebble Beach Pro-Am, and his record there isn't good at all. He's missed more cuts than he's made, and hasn't got a top 30. So, the top of the market really doesn't appeal to me. I've started my team a little bit further down, quite a bit further down, in fact. I've started with Matthew Jordan at 70-1. And we've had a few maidens, tour maidens, break the ducks here. Gallagher back in 2004, Ollie Wilson, as we said. Tyrrell Hatton was a maiden when he won his first Dunhill Links title, Victor Perez. And Matthew Jordan's got far more potential than most of those, the maidens that are playing here this week. I think he could well breakthrough very, very soon, potentially this week. He won the St Andrews Trophy as an amateur. He won the Lytham Trophy as an amateur too. He won the Lytham Trophy by 9 strokes. So kind of showed a bit of his hand at that point there. He played it on his third pro start. He shot a 77 in the first round and recovered to finish 32nd, which was quite a... Uh, quite strong sign back as a kind of a fledgling professional. He was fifth the last time they played here in 2009. He led at the halfway point, and that was when he was a Challenge Tour player. He's a fully fledged European Tour player now. And showing some good signs of progress. Sixth at Fairmont St Andrews recently, fourth at Crans Sorcières. That's a winner in waiting for me. And I think this Lynx terrain that we've got here this week is absolutely perfect for a player like Matthew Jordan. So, yeah, he leads my team this week. Martin Keimer have also backed at 60-1. Keimer's a funny one, isn't it? We all know about Abu Dhabi and his 10-shot lead. No win since the 2014 US Open. And ultimately, that's why he was a vice-captain last week at the Ryder Cup and he wasn't playing. And perhaps that's, the fact he was there, perhaps he saw, being involved with everything, but not being able to physically, pull his clubs out and fight for the team. And perhaps that'll act as a shot in the arm. Perhaps that's what will finally get him back on track. I mean, Keimer's only 36. He's got more Ryder Cups in him, in my view. A former world number one, two-time major champion. It's a winner here. Could have won a couple of more times if he had done all links and things gone his way on a Sunday. We've seen over the last year or so, there's a number of chances to win, hasn't he? And perhaps, everything will combine. Perhaps he'll get that Sunday where the door just opens. And I think ultimately, if Keimer wins at 60-1 on a track that he's previously won on, then that will, I think that will prove to be an exceptional price further down the line when you look at back at this. So Keimer's in. I've also backed Minwoo Lee at 90-1. And if you look down the field, he's ninth in terms of the world ranking for this field or relative to this field. But he's a lot further down the betting. And I think that presents an opportunity, I think. He's twice a winner now on Lynxy-style tracks. He won the Vic Open 2020 last year, won the Scottish Open earlier this year. And that's his Perth upbringing has made him master that low stinger, which is absolutely perfect in the breeze, perfect for Lynx golf, full stop. And with that forecast, with 15 to 20 mile an hour winds, I think that could be something that he could put to some good effect this week. Missed the cut at Wentworth in his last start, not worried about that. Missed the cut here on debut, not overly worried about that, given what we've seen from some of the winners here. And that probably explains the price, but if you go back prior to that, he led the Italian Open at halfway before that. And I think that he's coming back to a kind of a course and a setup that's absolutely going to suit him down to the ground. I don't think we're going to get a massive amount of rain here this week. So I think it's going to still run relatively fast. I don't think it's going to be super soft. So I think that, I think putting it all together, it's well worth a punt at 90-1. So that's three down. The fourth one I've backed is Joachim Lagergren. I backed him at the same price here back in 2019, 125-1 that was. He finished third, so he rewarded us each way back in 2019. I think he could do the same again, if not better, here this week. He absolutely loves this event as well. Two more top four finishes alongside that third place finish from 2019. He won in Sicily on a Carl Phillips track. Remember, Carl Phillips designed King's Barns, which is the track over in Sicily is another coastal affair. So I think he's kind of shown his hand as the style of golf that he prefers. He's been largely off the boil this year, but 17th at the Czech Masters and 10th going into Sunday at Wentworth was a good indicator. His long game looked really good at Wentworth, which really isn't his game. So if he's striking the ball quite nicely and that's magic putter can get going, he could rattle off a number of birdies here this week, I think, and get himself into contention. And finally, I've also backed Stephen Gallagher at 300-1, and we've had some mad long shot winners or long price winners, as I described earlier, in the likes of Howell and Perez and Olsen, Hoey and Wilson. So adding another or a rank outsider to my field or to my team could well be a good move, I think. We've also seen Harrington and Hatton both win this event twice since it started. So the fact that Gallagher's already a winner here back in 2004, him adding a second title to his name wouldn't be completely out of kilter, I don't think. 46 years of age now, could be excused for thinking he's kind of on the slippery slope down, but he's got his son Jack on the bag. It's given him a new lease of life, I think. He won the Indian Open with Jack on the bag back in 2019. And this year's not been great. 16th in Abu Dhabi was the highlight. 25th last time out at Wentworth, though. And his short game and his putting looked really good. He's normally a good, strong greens and regulation merchant, tee to green man. But his short game, his putting looked really good at Wentworth. And we followed him around for a little bit. And perhaps, you know, he puts it all together this week and performs well on home soil. That's what is a very, very long price for a player who's course proven. So Gallagher's in, Joachim Lagergren's in at 125s, Minwoo Lee's in at 90-1. We've also got Martin Kaymer at 60 and Matthew Jordan heads my team at 70-1 this week. Any fancies from you, Barry?
I'm going to stick with Kawamura.
Yep.
Masahiro Kawamura. He's been playing some very good golf recently. Yeah, other than that, it's FOMO at this stage. You know, I've backed him quite a bit, so let's stick with it and hope he converts.
Yeah, he's been playing some good, consistent stuff, hasn't he?
Yeah, and seems to do all right in, you know, challenging conditions. So I know this is going to be a mix of challenging conditions with needing to make some birdies, so hopefully he finds a blend this week. But he's out there at 60-1, so... Mm. I'm kind of with you on your thoughts about the guys at the top of the betting market. Not keen on the lads coming back from the Ryder Cup.
It's a tough sell, isn't it, to try and convince yourself that you know, a Lowry or a Fleetwood or a Hatton's going to lift his game instantly, despite the fact they've all got strong records here, Hatton in particular. But I can't be having it at that price, particularly how they played last week. You know, Lowry aside, and you know there was some fight from Lowry, and we all saw that. But tough ask, I think.
I think this could be a fun week for some betting and running because of the course switches and maybe just see where where things lie on Sunday morning, and you know, have a punt or two at a couple of guys to run up the leaderboard. Because low rounds can happen in St. Andrews.
Yeah. You can get off to a fast start, can't you? And you know, really start rattling birdies off on the front nine. And but yeah, it's a funny one, but the way it sets up with the 54-hole cut. So yeah, how many shots behind the lead can you be to get yourself really in the mix? But yeah, low rounds are definitely out there. And it looks like Sunday is going to be one of the less windy days, so potentially that will be one of the days for some lower scoring. Anyway, we shall see. Anything from that's you, Steve?
I think of the top five in the market, I'd take Norren. I think Alex Norren's been playing some nice golf recently, isn't he? 16-1 is not exactly the sexiest price known to man. But I think we've said for a while he's going to win a tournament. He's going to win a tournament. It's going to be on bent grass or fescue or Poana or a mix or something. Something's inbound, I think, with Norren. 61st in the world. So, you know, he could really do with getting into that top 50 and getting a nice Masters invite on his doormat come Christmas. So there's that motivation for him. The one that I did like the look of, played nicely at the Dutch Open. And I mentioned him for Wentworth, and I think he was 5 over through 6. It was Brandon Grace.
Yep.
I think Grace is, you know, 28-1 doesn't sound the worst price in the world. And I'm glad, I'm absolutely ecstatic that you stuck to your guns and you went with Joachim Lagergren. Because after the Dutch Open exercise, where I think the half the world were on him.
Yep.
You just get the feeling with him that it's one of those ones where if you just walk away, it's going to bite you on the bottom rather hard. And his record here at events by the coast, open affairs, low scoring, it's right up his right up the Swede street, isn't it? I think
And you know, it made sense at the Dutch Open because there was a lot of correlation across that week as well, and as you say, there were an awful lot of people, me included, on him, and it's a real letdown. But he's that kind of player, isn't he? He's that kind of streaky miscut, or you know, a third, fourth place finish, or potentially the win. And we've seen him capable of getting over the line. We've seen him capable of performing at this event. And as you just said, his record here is outstanding. So for a three-figure shot, I can't see any reason not to put him in, to be honest. Shot to nothing, really.
You've got, it's funny, you look at the world rankings at the moment, and I always think this time of year it's a good ploy just to look at the world rankings and where players are at.
Yeah.
You know, you've got Grace at 56th in the world. You've got Minwoo Lee, I think, is another good choice. He's at 60. Norrin at 61. Now, these players have got a lot to play for to get into that top 50. You know, you look at the top 50 at the moment. Poulter's just hanging there at 50th. You know, there's a Matthew Wolf at 47th. There's players there. Brian Harman, Justin Rose, 44, 45. There's players there that aren't playing particularly great who look vulnerable. And something like this Dunhill Links that's got a massive OWGR points to the winner. Even if you get a nice top three, top four, there's a lot of points that way. You know, a player like Lee, Winler, you know, Minwoo, Grace, they must see this and think, yeah, it's a good opportunity this week to really vault up those world rankings.
Yep, yep.
Top 50, such a big, big step to make and get that Masters invite for 2022 just settled before you eat your turkey at Christmas. It's a big deal for these players.
Yeah, it certainly becomes more of the narrative now that at this point of the year, as we head towards the back end, head towards Dubai from the European Tour perspective and the final few events over on your side.
The other thing I will say, great to see Billy Horschel, you know, attended Wentworth playing this as well. He's clearly, you know, making a go for this race to Dubai, so he's more than welcome. So kudos to Billy, I think.
Yeah, no, he's supported the tour really well.
It's a shame for Tony didn't come over, but clearly it's understandable. And he's played over here quite a few times. He's played this event a few times, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's got a couple of top tens. That's a tough journey when you've got a few bottles of champagne inside your stomach, isn't it?
You'd have thought Shane or Tommy would have just said, come across in our jet. Or with Tyrrell.
Yeah.
Or with Kaima. Yeah, he could have got in one of those private jets, surely.
Oh, I expect they all like Tony. He seems like a lovely, likeable bloke.
How can you not like him? Right, onto the PGA Tour. The Sanderson Farms Championship. I've got no idea what Sanderson Farms do, but I think it's poultry-based. I don't know if they've got a contract with KFC or... But I think they're a big poultry company potentially. But this tournament, it's had a long existence on the PGA Tour. Goes way back, I think like mid 2007, something like that. They had they used to play this at Annandale, if you remember, which was a Jack Nicklaus design. It's always been played in the southern states of the United States. But it used to be one of these alternate events where it would go off against, I think it used to be against potentially the Open Championship going way back, and then against the WGC. I'm just looking, actually, the history of the tournament goes back to 1968, amazing. It used to be the Magnolia Classic. But of late, yeah, it's been the Viking Classic, the Southern Farm Bureau Classic, True South Classic. Now we've got the Sanderson Farms. They play it now at the Country Club of Jackson, which is in Mississippi. So we're in the deep south. Time of year, so late September, early October, of course, this will be when this starts. You do get some variable weather here. Some years it's soft, like last year, where Sergio Garcia won at 70-1. Yeah, you heard that right, 70-1, Sergio Garcia. Very soft last year. Don't think it'll be soft this year. They've had a lot less rain, and the temperatures look warmer, anything up to 30 degrees Celsius, which you think about it, in October, 30 degrees Celsius. So I think it's going to be that perfect PGA Tour mix, Barry. No rough, firm, bouncy fairways, and they'll have the Mississippi fire crews in from early on to get those greens nice and receptive.
It's localized rainstorms.
Yeah, coming out the back of a fire.
On 18 small localized rainstorms.
Yeah. It reminds me a little bit of the Russian Grand Prix this week in Formula One, where it started to rain with five laps to go.
That and was incredible.
It was an incredible race. I like Formula One. It's one of my favourite sports, always has been. And then I turned it off when it became a procession. Mm. But this year, it's really got me going. And yeah, that was a cracking race. And that was similar, wasn't it? I think it was corner five. It was raining on one corner for a few laps, and they were all hitting this corner and they're going everywhere. And the rest of the track was dry. And then slowly but surely, it started raining everywhere, and it was carnage. But I get Lando. The feeling the water tenders will be out in Jackson this week, Mississippi, to attack this golf course on the greens. The actual greens themselves are Champion Ultra Dwarf Bermuda Grass. And I'll get my agronomy hat on. You know me in agronomy. These greens are exactly the same as the greens that we see at the Wyndham Championship for Sedgefield Country Club. And one thing you could take from Sergio Garcia last year, whose inbound form was absolutely shocking, as you would expect, 70-1 in a relatively weak tournament. His forming was miscut, miscut, 66, miscut. The one piece of concrete evidence that you got with Garcia was he won the 2012 Wyndham at Sedgefield on those Champion Bermuda grass greens. And you do see it. You do see some quite strong links between Sedgefield and people that place, at the very least, place here. Sebastian Munoz, who won this 2 years ago, he's had a top seven at Sedgefield since. And actually, if you look at the places from last year, JT Poston was in the paying places at 100-1. And JT Poston is a winner of the Wyndham Championship. So there's a lot of carryover between the Wyndham and here. Sungjae Im's another one that's done well at both. Benny Ann. The list goes on and on. So that's a good crossover. It's not, I wouldn't say it's absolutely, it isn't something where, you need to see Wyndham form to select someone this way. I mean, Cameron Champ's done nothing at the Wyndham. Ryan Armour has, though. Ryan Armour won here in 2017. Very short hitter. Ryan Armour's had a couple of top fives at the Wyndham since. And I think he had a top five at the Wyndham in the build-up to this, to his win in 2017. So, yeah, there's something there in terms of the Champion Bermuda grass greens, undoubtedly. It's a pretty stock par 72. We're talking about 7,461 yards, which is pretty stock. Water in play on five of the holes. The greens themselves, kind of mid-range. I'd say small to mid-range, just 6,200 square feet. It's a pretty nondescript golf course, tree-lined in areas, but you can take it apart. The gruff is only 2 inches long, and it's Bermuda grass linked with the zoysia. And as you know, we do like our zoysia, don't we? That just makes the ball sit up anyway, so I don't think you're going to get bad lies here. And that comes across in the scoring. 19 under for Garcia last year. Munoz, 18 under. That was his maiden PGA Tour victory. 2018 was Cameron Champ, 21 under par. I think we're going to be at that kind of level again with the watered greens and the very calm weather conditions. Nice and warm. There's a drop down in temperature on Sunday, but I think the maximum wind gusts are going to be something like 8 miles an hour. So they're just going to take this course apart. The cut line the last 2 years has been 3 under par, which tells you, you've got to be playing well. Now, average winning prices here are interesting. Past 8 renewals, so since we went to this split season, 133-1. And going back to 2010, the average is 125-1. So we've had some big price winners here. Last two, though, 66 and 70, that kind of... Well, we've had 66, 66 and 70 to one last three winners here. And that's where the actual tournament itself has got a bit stronger. I mean, this week, we've got a half-decent field. Sam Burns, Sergio Garcia has travelled down from Wisconsin to defend, so fair play to Sergio. Sam Burns, Sung Jae-im, Will Zalatoris, Siwoo Kim, Matthew Wolf, Lucas Herbert, Mackenzie Hughes, and K.H. Lee are all within the world's top 60. So it's not the worst of fields. It's a decent strength. And again, it's this ecclesiastic mix of some PGA Tour journeymen and a few of the, I wouldn't say elite, but a few of the top ranking guys. And we've also got a lot of these new Korn Ferry graduates who we're still learning masses about. Player skills, what I always like to look at. And I must say, Paul, I really did enjoy using the predictor model this week with the strokes gained. I maxed up on one of my predictor sessions. I just maxed up strokes gained off the tee, driving distance, and strokes gained on approach. Just saw what that drove out. And that kind of insight is really kind of eye-opening. So, yeah, again, to the listeners, just come and use it because it's all free of charge. You can run as many models as you want completely free of charge, and it just brings names to the top of the list that you might not expect. So it's good at uncovering potential names that you can do more research on. If we look at strokes gained tournament skill averages across the last five winners here. So going back to here's a name for you. Cody Gribble won this in 2016. I don't think much happened to Cody after that. I remember him grabbing an alligator or a crocodile and throwing it back in the water at one tournament. Gribble, Armour, Champ, Munoz and Garcia, the last five winners. If we look at their strokes gained averages across their wins, averaging through. Strokes gained off the tee, they were in 11th spot in the field. Approach, 13th. Around the green, 34th, not important. Strokes gained tee to green, 7th. Strokes gained putting, 8th. So it's one of those where you've got to hit the ball nice and long, be good with your irons, and you've actually got to have a good putting week. It's kind of the reverse of what we saw at Silverado a few weeks ago, where it was all about approach play, well, and putting was not important at all. So you've got to have a decent putter this week. I don't know. I think that's ultimately to win, but then you still see the names of Benny Ann, who has been close here. I think I think tee to green, some GIR monsters isn't a bad look here either. I do genuinely believe, though, that I think you've got to be a bit... There's a mix, but it tends to be the last 3 years have all been about power off the tee. Champ was first for driving distance. Munoz was fourth. And Sergio Garcia, 9th for driving distance. You can then go back to 2017 and Ryan Armour was 70th at 270 yards off the tee. So if you're absolutely on it as a short hitter, but hitting tons and tons of greens, and you're a good putter like Armour is, I think you've still got a chance. Malnati kind of took the same route as well. Peter Malnati, who's got a good record here, Peter Malnati. I think there's something for everybody. It's just you've got to try and pick the guy that's going to pass better. There's going to hit plenty of greens and putt best that week, which is never easy in a resort scoring contest. I'll tell you what else I quickly looked at. I looked at the second tournament on the PGA Tour in the restart and who's won it. I didn't look at the US Open last year because that was a bit of an abnormality, but just in a normal PGA Tour year, who wins the second tournament of the new season? Well, 2019 was Munoz at 66-1. 2018 was Mark Leishman. He won in Malaysia 22-1. Pat Perez won in 2017 in Malaysia 50-1. And Justin Thomas won in Malaysia. That was the second time he won that because he won it in 2015 and 16. He won at 25-1. So the last four winners of the second PGA Tour event have been 25-1, 50-1, 22-1 and 66-1. Interestingly enough, two of those had finished in the top 20 at the Tour Championship on their last outing. But this was the bit that really got me. Munoz had finished 7th at the Greenbrier, the season opener. Thomas had been 8th at the Safeway Open, the season opener. Smiley Kaufman, he won 250-1 at TPC Summerlin in 2015, which was the second event that year. 10th at Silverado. And then we can go back to Bryce Mulder and Jonas Blixt. They'd won, they'd finished 10th and 3rd on the season opener those 2 years were at Las Vegas, TPC Summerlin. So it seems to me that if you can get a player that's in decent nick, like a top 10 finish on the first outing of the PGA Tour, a lot of those come through and win the second event. Mulder, Blixt, Kaufman, Thomas, and Munoz have all won the second event of the PGA Tour season after having a top 10 in their first outing of the year.
Yeah, I guess a lot of players will use this period of time or target this period of time to, you know, as we've mentioned earlier, to get themselves advanced up the world rankings. But they also see it as an opportunity because a lot of the big players will start to drift away from the fields. And, you know, perhaps it feels slightly less daunting to be up against a set of kind of relatively level peers rather than having superstars at the top of the market each week.
I mean, you look at the top of the betting this week, with all due respect. I mean, Sam Burns was on my shortlist from the start. I didn't have a clue what price I got. I think if I could have got 22, 25 to 1 about Sam Burns, I'd have taken the plunge because he's perfect for this golf course. But I'm not backing Sam Burns at 16 to 1. I'm certainly not backing Will Zalatoris at 16 to 1. Who, you just look at his Corn Ferry history, there's a lot of top 10s there. It's just like a top 10 conveyor belt with one win. I think he's one of those guys that the layers can just put up a really short price on Zalatoris, who's clearly a talent, but still a maiden. So 16 to 1, the two favourites, one win between the two of them. Sungjae Im at 18 to 1, one win in his PGA Tour career. Sergio Garcia, 20s. None of this is interesting me at all. I'll go through my bet. One of my players has withdrawn, which wasn't particularly nice. So I suppose it saved me a bit of stake. But I have got a deep lean on another player that I might just tip up in replace. That player was Taylor Gooch. Who you think about it, he was 4th at Silverado a couple of weeks ago. He kind of fitted the mould really perfectly. But the guys that I've got in my team, Mito Pereira, who just, you know, 3rd last time out, 33 to 1, 8 place each way, 50 odds with William Hill. Why wouldn't you back Pereira? He's trending. He's a 3-time winner on the Corn Ferry. One of those wins included a course. He won the BMW Pro-Am on the Corn Ferry. And two of those courses, it's a weird tournament. They play over a 3-course rota, and two of the courses feature Bermuda grass, and one of them features Champion Bermuda grass. So he clearly gets on with the putting surface. I think Pereira has got the mix that I'm looking for this week. A good driver of the golf ball. Fantastic greens in regulation, man. And the guy that's at least a mid-range to better than middle of the range putter. I think Pereira's a cracking bet, 33 to 1. I would expect him to be popular. Gooch has withdrawn. He was going to be a 45 to 1 shot. So that takes me down to CT Pan. Now, CT Pan, 66 to 1 with William Hill on the 8 places. Pan has got that Sedgefield link. He's also the sort that seems to be able to play well on shorter formats. I mean, I'm seeing the winner at the RBC Heritage 2019 at Harbortown. He's finished 2nd in 2018 at the Wyndham at Sedgefield to Branch Snedeker, because I can remember sitting watching that. I was on Snedeker and he was in a head-to-head with Pan. And in the end, Pan kind of blew it on the 72nd hole when Snedeker was sweating away and he was struggling to convert Snedeker. And in the end, Pan gave it to him on the 72nd hole. But this is it. RSM Classic Sea Island. There's 3rd at the Honda Classic over the years. There's a lot of form that really links in nicely what I'm looking for. He was sixth at the Fortinet Championship in that first start 2 weeks ago in this new tour season. And he was 12th here last year. So I think CT Pan could be one of those ones. He's not short off the tee, Pan. He's kind of deceiving. He's like a 295 guy, but he can, when he's hitting the ball well off the tee, very, very arrow straight. So I like CT Pan this week at 66s. I've got my old friend, who I haven't been on for a while, but, you know, sometimes you've got to take the plunge. Scott Piercy. He's been playing some nice golf recently, Piercy. Third at the Barracuda, 15th at the Wyndham, where he was third after 54 holes. There's the champion Bermuda grass link at the Wyndham. 11th last time out of the Fortinet. As we know with Scott, he's not short off the tee. He's got plenty of power. He can unleash it out there, 310, 315 when he wants to. He's also a champion Bermuda grass winner. He won the 2015 Barbasol Championship, which back then was played in neighbouring Alabama at the Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail in Auburn. That featured champion Bermuda grass greens. He's a four-time PGA Tour winner, and he's undoubtedly found some form of late. That last outing at the Wyndham in August, mid-August, so only about 6 weeks ago, he shot 64-66 in rounds one and two to be second in a tie for second going into the weekend. So Scott Piercy, 80-1.
I kind of look past him because, you know, he always reminds me of someone who struggles with a putter. But looking through deeper into his stats, he's actually been putting quite nicely recently. 12th for strokes going putting at the Wyndham and 21st for strokes going putting at the Fortinet last time out. So you put that together with his ball striking, I can see where you're coming from, I think.
He's been putting very positively of late, which he went through, last year he had a terrible, terrible year until he realised that he might be losing his playing privileges. And all of a sudden at the Barracuda, he popped up from nowhere. We always know he's a bit of a desert rat. And he got that all-important, was it third or fourth at the Barracuda that got the momentum going, and he managed to squeak back into the top 125. But yes, the putter's been a lot better. The one at a big price that I'm going for is Wyndham Clark. Now, our guy at the top of the show was mentioning brown trouser guys in contention, and Wyndham Clark's certainly one of those. I wouldn't have thought he's not the most stable when he gets towards the top of the leaderboard, Wyndham Clark. But saying that, the last time he was really in contention, which was about this time last year at the Bermuda Championship, he actually got into a playoff with Brian Gay. I'm sure we all remember that. Brian Gay won that, didn't he, in a playoff. And his playoff victim was Wyndham Clark. Now, Clark is as long as you like off the tee. He's an absolute bomber. But these statistics were very non-Wyndham Clark last time out at the Fortinet. Sixth for driving distance, well, that is very Wyndham Clark, but 11th for driving accuracy, third for total driving, 10th for greens in regulation, and second for ball striking. Now, I look back, that's the best set of numbers he's ever had on the PGA Tour. And when it translated to strokes gained tee to green, he's only ever had two outings at a better level from tee to green on the PGA Tour. 2019 Travelers Championship, where he was 15th, and the 3M Open, which is probably the one we remember the most, where he was right in the mix the first time they went up to Minnesota, and he was right in the mix with Matthew Wolf, Colin Morikawa, Adam Hadwin, and Bryson DeChambeau. I think he was leading for quite a chunk of that tournament, and in the end, it all got a bit too much for him on the sort of around the turn. But he's still got a top five. But yeah, Wyndham Clark, an absolute bomber off the tee. I've got him 175-1, eight places each way with William Hill. Maximise the each way places at 175-1. And you just look at his Korn Ferry results. He's had a couple of decent results down in this kind of area. 17th at the Mississippi Classic, third at the Knoxville Open, 11th at the Nashville Golf Open in neighbouring Tennessee. So he does play well in this neck of the woods when he comes down here. The one I'm going to add, and the one that was a 50-50, in fact, there was three. There were three players that were right in the mix coming to my final selection for the week. I went with Taylor Gooch, who withdrew. The other one that I haven't selected or won't select is Charlie Hoffman, because it's just Charlie Hoffman, isn't it? It's just Charlie. The one I am going to plump for, and he does make a lot of sense from an OWGR perspective. He makes a lot of sense from a Wyndham Championship Bermuda Grass perspective. And when I just looked at his stats yesterday, he's been phenomenal off the tee his last two outings. And tee to green, he ranked 20th tee to green at the BMW in the FedEx Cup playoffs. And then he ranked 8th for tee to green at the 40 net, where he came 11th. We know he's a Bermuda grass monster. We know that he can win on the PGA Tour. And all three of his victories have come on Bermuda grass greens. I'm going to have to plump for Siwoo Kim. And actually, in this field, there's a 33-1 out there hanging at Unibet. I just think, you know, if you look at Siwoo Kim against a Corey Connors, a Sung Jae-im, a Sam Burns, a Willa Zalatoris, who was 16-1, 18-1, I'll just take the 33-1 on Siwoo Kim. I don't see him being much less of a player, really. He might be slightly lower down, I mean. But again, he's in the top, where is he in the rankings? He's just on the fringe of the top 50. He's sitting 48th in the world. So he's in danger there. I just fancy him. I think he's going to be motivated. He's playing nicely at the moment. Second at the Wyndham in August. That Wyndham, he's just an absolute beast around that golf course. He just contends there every single year. And actually, if you look at how he's hitting the ball at the moment, he was actually 36th in the field at the 40 net for driving distance, all drives. He was just 298, so 304 for the week. So he's clearly getting the ball out there. And he's long enough off the tee, Siwoo. The half the trouble with Siwoo is he can be very errant off the tee. But at the moment, he's hitting the ball well off the tee. Great tee to green. So I'm going to be in. I'm going to just top up my Talal Gooch stake. Will go on Siwoo Kim. So Siwoo Kim, Mito Pereira. I've got CT Pam. I've got Scott Piercy and I've got Wyndham Clark. Those will be my five for the Sanderson Farms Championship. What about you two, Jen? So who do you fancy, Barry?
I'm not sure. I'm in a bit of
You in a Fred Funk?
Yeah. I need a reset. I don't know. I'm finding it difficult to settle on one or two guys. I've like loads popping up and one's popping up.
Who are you in? Come on, give us the names. Whose names? We'll have a chat about it.
Why does Luke List keep popping up way up on all? I know this is the thing, right? So it's
List is the perfect player, isn't he? He's long off the tee, a high GIR man, but it's just always disappoints, doesn't he?
It would break your heart. That's the thing. So. Yeah, Taylor Pendrith.
Yeah, he's interesting. Paul mentioned him. You were on him last time, weren't you, Paul?
Yeah. I think it's
big driver.
Big driver, but doesn't seem to have much of a history of converting to wins. And you know, okay, so look, he's 66-1. Not a bad punt, but you'd like to see some evidence of it. He seems to have a lot of bridesmaid performances. You wonder about his ability to convert.
One I stared at for a long while was Keith Mitchell. Big off the tee, Bermuda grass monster. Never backed him. Glenn. But a similar kind of player to Luke List, didn't he, Mitchell? Just long. And I remember he was at the Northern Trust, wasn't it, when he birdied the last two holes to get into the top 70 in New Jersey a few weeks back. Playing half decent. So you're in a bit of a Fred Funk, Barry, yeah?
Little bit.
I genuinely think this would be the kind of perfect course. And I think he's got some decent results here in the past. But clearly, you know, that brilliant run he had last season as a hit is probably... You know, it feels a shameless power kind of course. But you know, you're seeing 40s and 45s now, aren't you, about Seamus, where it always used to be 100 to 1 or 150 to 1.
Hey, we stuck with him until he got to 16s, you know, so no, like 40s true. Is not bad.
True.
It's just, I guess it's been a bit of a break. So, you know, there's that unknown and how he comes back.
Mm. And as I said, from the, you know, that kind of just looking at the second tournament of the season, players that haven't played either the tournament championship or had a start already don't tend to win this week. I mean, you could just build a case for Gary Woodland. You could get Matthew Wolf's another one in there. You know, clearly better than the price you're getting, but Wolf hasn't been hitting his straps of late. What about you, Paul?
Yeah, there's a few that I'm looking at. The only one that I've backed so far, you mentioned it before, is Peter Malnati, which I thought for 150 to 1 was worth taking, given that he's a course winner. He was runner-up again last year. He won in 2015. We closed with a 63 last year to finish second. Yeah. He's got a little bit of progressive. He's had a poor year, Malnati, in general. But he's got a little bit of progressive form, 47th and 22nd over his last two outings. And a couple of decent rounds, actually, within that last effort at the 40 net. And actually, he struggled going positive on every aspect of his game last time out as well, which was an eye-opener for Peter Malnati. So for 150 to 1 for a guy who could be, as I say, progressing in the right direction and course-proven, multiple course-proven, I'm quite happy to take that. The other guys I'm looking at, Scott Stallings, got a good course record as well, and he was sixth last time out. I can see where you're coming from with Mito and Pan. I don't know. I'll have a deeper look into it. But Keith Mitchell, first round leader potentially as well. He's the sort who can pop up and stick a low one in early doors. But only one so far is Malnati at 150s. And I thought that was a significantly mispriced. I thought it should be 100 to 1 or shorter, really. So, happy with that.
He's your typical fall guy, isn't he? The autumn player that can kind of get his card pretty much sorted and then disappears for the rest of the year.
Yeah. And again, he's another one who could potentially pop up first round leader. He can get hot in that one round. And if it's the first round, then you can be sitting pretty after a Thursday, which is always a nice place to be in.
I think that's us. We're bang on 1 minute and six, 1 hour, 6 minutes. It seems to happen every podcast. Right. Thank you, chaps.
Yeah, best of luck, guys.
Cheers, guys. Best of luck, everybody.
Best of luck to you next week, Paul. What have you got?
Oh, Spanish Open next week. You're John Rahm's playing, apparently. John Rahm at 3 to 1 and then the rest of the field at 25s. If that's
3 to 1, you'd be lucky to get 5 to 2. Let's be frank. You'd be lucky to get 2 to 1.
Yeah, I do always take these early European Tour fields with a pinch of salt, mind, because they don't always manifest the way that the early list shows. But we'll live in some hope that he turns up and
we've got a bit of value. Yeah. We've got three decent tournaments on the PGA Tour coming up. The Shriners, which is always loaded. That's from Las Vegas. We've also got another Las Vegas tournament the week after, the CJ Cup. They're playing that at the Summit. So I don't know if we can get any MGM Resort kind of sponsored player links into that one, like Jason Kokrag last year at Shadow Creek. Oh, yeah, I played there loads of times afterwards. And, yeah, it's my favourite golf course. And then the Zozo Championship, which I believe they're still planning to go to Japan for that, to Tokyo. So three decent tournaments on the PGA Tour coming up in October. Thank you for your time, gentlemen. And thank you to the listeners. 5-star reviews, please. As ever, please keep them coming. And we'll see you next week. Enjoy your golf betting. Goodbye.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf.